Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another Geek Town podcast. This week I've been talking to the producer Wandra Bertram. Along with director Gisela Blastias, they are producing a documentary called A Brief History of Time Travel. They talk to various people in science and pop culture about pop culture's fixation on time travel and scientists' efforts over the years to make it a reality. They've managed to talk to people such as Bill Nye the Science Guy, the legendary games designer Tim Schafer, who's responsible for Monkey Island and Full Throttle and those classic old LucasArts games. They've also spoken to people like Daniel Wilson, who's the author of Robopocalypse. When I spoke to Wanda, they weren't actually funded on Kickstarter. They now are. They actually managed to get $5,000 over their funding, which is fantastic news. So it means the documentary is definitely going ahead. You can still get involved and you can still donate. There is a link on the post for this podcast, which will take you to their website and the donation page. As ever, if you want any more news or information about films or TV shows, come to our website at geektown.co.uk. Hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Wanda, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
The last time I did a Skype call with somebody in England, I was interviewing for Oxford and it went horribly. This will go a lot better, hopefully.
Do you want to tell me a bit about the movie?
Yeah, so the director, Gisela Blastias, was really, this is really her kind of brainchild. She began working on this about 3 years ago when she saw a French movie called La Jetée. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it involves it's a post-apocalyptic story of a man kind of going back in time through black and white photographs, and it ended up inspiring 12 Monkeys. But she was really interested in kind of how time travel, how the idea of traveling through time has impacted scientific research, but also pop culture and why we're so obsessed with it. So this is a film about that. So we've brought together interviews from physicists, pop culture, influencers, game designers, everyone like that to kind of tell the story.
Cool. How did you get involved with the project?
Oh, I did not go to film school. I worked for a long time at this place called the Northwest Film Forum in Seattle. And she and I met there, Gisela and I met there at a gala several months ago. And she said, I need a producer on this film. And I said, great, I'm looking for a production job. And I had actually been working, I was the editor of a science fiction journal when I was in college. So this was a pretty good fit for me. We also, Gisela also met our editor, Danny, at a Seattle film event. But Danny is an editor down in Los Angeles, and she was really into Doctor Who, so it was a pretty natural match.
So have you always had an interest in time travel and that sort of sciencey thing, or was this kind of all completely new to you?
Both, I think. I've always been interested in time travel. I think definitely this is going to sound pretty morbid, but because it relates so much to our concept of kind of how short life is and how fleeting our experience in the world is. So philosophically and artistically, I've always been really, really into it. And I love, I'm just such a, like, I'm Midnight in Paris and things like that, going back in time to like meet with your idols. Like, doesn't everybody like love that idea? Science-wise, I have the science skills of a chimp, so this was really, it was really educational working on this movie because we got to interview a bunch of different scientists in all these different fields, and they would reference each other, which was really cool. The coolest thing for me, besides talking to scientists about their own theories about time, was hearing them geek out over fictional theories about time. They're like, okay, let me tell you about the DeLorean and Back to the Future, and I'm like, you're a scientist. But it was wonderful because that's what motivates a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at I was lucky enough to interview George Takei a couple of years ago, and we got talking in that about how Star Trek particularly influences not necessarily time travel but influences science in general. And you look at a lot of the gadgets that we carry around now and look back at some of the old Star Trek stuff and how much those sort of shows seem to, particularly Star Trek, seems to have influenced the thing that scientists go on to then build, you know?
Yeah, that's huge. You can't see me, but I'm nodding a lot. I actually just saw this really cool, it was like an interview last night with Nichelle Nichols, who was obviously, she was Uhura.
Yes, yeah.
Did you know that she was contracted out by NASA to go find the first women astronauts?
No, really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Hillary Wright got into NASA because Nichelle Nichols was like speaking at her school or something, and she was like, sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that part of it is really fascinating to me, the relationship between science fiction and science, because a lot of people think it's pretty one-directional, and, you know, science influences science fiction, but there's a lot of reciprocity is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying with the Star Trek kind of stuff, I suppose it sort of makes sense, because people that are going to go into things like science tend to grow up watching sci-fi shows. So, so, you know, that when they get to a position where they can build things, they're going to be influenced by things that they saw in their youth and going, I wonder if I can build a tricorder. I wonder if I can build something that does this, you know?
I know. I'm trying to think right now of things I've seen in Star Trek that I would really look forward to in real life. I mean, tons of things. I can't even pick just one.
Yeah, but I mean, there's things like, you know, the idea of having universal, you know, the communicators and pads in particular, because that always fascinated me when they had different size pads for different things. Yeah. And I thought, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you have one large pad? And now, of course, everybody has pads of different sizes, and you see totally, like, some picking pockets, some you can carry around. You know, there's totally reasons for it, you know. So
yeah, I love that. One of the coolest moments working on this film in an interview was when this author named Daniel Wilson, he wrote Robopocalypse, and we were talking to him about this kind of stuff, and he said there's actually, at the company Intel, there's actually a wing of that company that hires science fiction writers just to imagine, kind of to be the liaison between engineers and customers, and kind of say, here's how a customer is going to expect this product to work, and here's what they're going to be looking for from futuristic technology, which I think is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's a great idea. What a job that is.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's probably a lucky strike for whoever that science fiction writer is. Like, thank this.
Absolutely.
Whatever other career they're going to go into. Yeah. No, it's super cool.
How easy was it to get people to come and talk to you for this project?
Oh, that's a good question. It really depends. Actually, I think... Okay, I'm going to gather my thoughts, see if I can answer that a little bit more concisely. Some were really, really easy. Tim Schafer was a lot easier than I thought. Because
really?
he was kind of a game legend. He's a legend in the game designing world.
Oh, yeah. I know of Tim Schafer very well. I love his stuff, so.
No, it's good to talk to another fan. That's awesome. So people are like, oh, yeah, of course I know about him. And some people are like, who's that? And then I have to explain. He emailed us back like 5 minutes later and he was like, yeah, sure. Which was super cool. There's actually a theoretical physicist who lives about 10 minutes away from me, theoretically, but hasn't been available over email for the last year and nobody knows where he is. He's probably traveling through time right now. So that's kind of what we think. it's hard to categorize what people were easy and what people were difficult to get a hold of. But once they did begin talking, this was the cool part. We would ask them about time travel, and at first they would be like, "Well, I'm not sure I have anything that your audience needs to hear." But then they would just start talking and talking and talking because everybody loves the subject.
Yeah, no, it must be a very sort of popular, almost water cooler topic for scientists, I guess. Of you know, imagining what could happen, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Are all the interviews done now, or are there people you're still looking at trying to get?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple. You might know the name Ronald Mallett. He's a scientist who's been working on problems of time travel. But then there's also certain people in pop culture. One of my favorite musicians, Janelle Monáe, I thought she would be a really cool interviewee for the film because she's done a lot of songs that are kind of structured on the concept of time travel. But those are... those are kind of the last couple of interviews we're trying to get. Everything else is done, which is cool. We're just getting the funding for post-production right now.
Yeah, speaking of funding, you're less than $600 away from getting the Kickstarter funded.
I know. I was doing a dance before we start call.
So I'm guessing that's probably gonna get funding because you've got 52 hours left. So and. And you've done about $500 like in the last 24 hours at least, I think. So
yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm really we're getting to the point where we're kind of moving on to things like the poster design and the t-shirts and actually getting into editing. So I'm really excited to move on to that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I was wondering because there's a couple of fairly prominent UK scientist, one in particular actually, which I wondered if you'd managed to get hold of or if you'd heard of, is a guy called Brian Cox.
Actually he used to be in a band, right? And now he does like
used to be in a band called D.
Actually, that's funny you mentioned his name. I think we tried a couple times and then we got overwhelmed with the campaign, so we had to stop trying for a while.
That's a shame because he'd be absolutely brilliant, and he loves his time travel stuff, so.
No, there's actually it's been sad based states. I mean, it's been great because there's a lot to talk about here. But our director is actually in the UK right now for a couple days. And I know that she would love it if we could get over to England or to the UK. Or God, I'm getting it mixed up because I'm talking to you and I'm freaking out. but there's tons. I mean, Doctor Who too. I mean, there's a ton of stuff we'd love to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it must be easy. You must be able to get hold of at least one of the old Doctors, I would have thought.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, who would you like us to get a hold of? You can put it in now.
See, I think out of all of them, I think Sylvester McCoy is probably going to be the most interesting one for an interview, I would have thought.
What makes you say that?
He's incredibly enthusiastic. He's a very, very sweet guy. I know somebody who's an actor in LA who has worked with him because he does a lot of audio dramas, so he does a lot of the Big Finish audio dramas, and he'd actually worked with Sylvester and said he's the sweetest, nicest man you will ever meet.
Well, I love sweet interviewees; those are the best. So we'll do our best to get in touch with them. That would be amazing.
the other guy is a guy that works with Brian Cox quite a lot, but he's actually a stand-up comedian. But I think he has a degree; he has some sort of science degree. I think he has a physics degree. He's a guy called he's an Irish comedian called Dara O'Brien, who would be brilliant as well.
Oh wow! So you better send me this list of names because we're done, but we're not done. You know, that's what's so fun about working on this film. It's that even you know it's self-directed, so even when you're moving into new stages of it, you know that doesn't mean you can't reach back and grab people and you know get in your time machine and go interview somebody else. So, yeah.
They're the guys. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the other guy, of course, but I imagine he's slightly more difficult to get hold of.
Yeah. Yes, he was in Seattle recently. And did a talk. The closest we got to him was going to the talk,
right.
but his agent just said explicitly Mr. deGrasse Tyson is not doing interviews right now.
Well, that's a shame.
But we'll see. I mean, you know, perhaps if the film scales to that point, I mean,
yeah. I watched all of the recent Cosmos series. I thought that was superb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked it. I've watched a little bit of it, and I grew up on the Carl Sagan Cosmos series, so it was really cool seeing that come back.
Yeah, I don't remember the Carl Sagan one. I'm nearly 40, so but I don't remember it being as big a thing over here, but certainly the recent one. I like the use of animation and all that sort of stuff that they mixed in with it. It was really nice.
Yeah, I think that's a great tool. Not to cut in, I think that's a really good tool for expressing kind of scientific or science fiction concepts, and that's something that we're looking at doing in the film as well. We've got a lot of animation and motion graphics planned, which is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. Have you got that started already? Or
we've got a little bit of it. It's mostly kind of in kind of the theory, kind of laying the groundwork right now. We've got two main animators who are working with us. No, three. A few days ago, and they work really well together. And so we know what their style looks like, but they haven't begun putting it together because it's actually kind of a, I'm not sure if you've probably done some animation before, but it's kind of a hard process because you have to know exactly how long you need for audio, and then you know to put it to the animation.
Yeah, I did some anime. My background in web design, but my course at college was sort of doing all sorts of different things, and I did animation back there. Yeah, it's a painstaking process, but it's always great when you see the final product, you know. So
it's beautiful. Yeah, I'm really excited to see that work. One of our inspirations is this really short film called A Brief History of John Baldessari. That's No relation to the title, but it just happens to be like that. If you look it up on YouTube, it's just really amazing, really fast, fast cuts. So it's that kind of animation and simple motion graphics that we're really going for.
Oh, cool. Okay, I'll go and see if I can find that. You also mentioned in the Kickstarter video, you mentioned about trying to get composers and people involved. How are you doing with the music at the moment?
Oh my gosh! You know what's funny about having a Kickstarter is you get messages from a lot of musicians saying we found your film, we happen to make music, would you like to partner with us? So we're not we haven't nailed down people to do large portions of the soundtrack. We have some bands who are interested in writing one or two songs for us, so we've got that planned out, but that's one of the things that we're going to have some fun with after the campaign's over.
Cool. Yeah, I talk with quite a lot of musicians as well while I'm doing these interviews, because I have a contact in LA that deals with a lot of the TV musicians, TV composers. I was just kind of interested because of that. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if you know anybody, you'd recommend.
there's a few guys. I'm not sure what their budgets would be like, though. That's the problem. there's one guy who I really like. There's a guy called Phil Eisler who does the soundtrack to the TV show Revenge.
Cool.
He's fantastic. Nate Barr as well, who does some wonderfully strange things. He's the composer for True Blood. So he's fantastic. He has a very odd range of instruments, with some including human bones and skulls and things. great sort of produces some amazing music. He does the Americans as well. So it's kind of very odd, sort of slightly off the wall stuff. Very good.
That stuff is awesome. I mean, we're definitely looking for composers, either a wide range of composers or a composer or two with wide ranges, because at least for me, I mean, what struck me throughout doing these interviews and doing a lot of research on the topic of time travel is just how much music music kind of dates us, and it is such a such a powerful icon of what certain time periods mean to people. And half the people that we interview off the street saying, you know, where would you go if you could go anywhere and why would you go there? Yeah. Say, oh, back to this era so I could listen to this kind of music. So I think that bringing in music from all different eras and style is going to be really essential to the film.
That makes sense, I guess. If you're talking about a film about time travel, you kind of want that throughout, really, don't you?
Yeah.
So going back to the fun.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
funding. Was there any particular reason you went for Kickstarter or decided that was the best way to get it funded? And how's the experience been of running through Kickstarter?
Oh, man. Yeah, Kickstarter was, it seemed like a good choice for us because we have really met so many people along the way of making this movie who've been interested in it and interested in helping us out. So that's meant both that that we felt like we had a pretty wide support base, but also that we're able to do post-production on a pretty lean budget because we've gotten this amazing outpouring of volunteer support. The other reason is just that, I mean, plain and simple, Giselle and I really think that crowdfunded filmmaking is a fantastic model. To put it in just a few words, filmmaking is entering into a really interesting new phase that I probably can't analyze intelligently, but it definitely seems like crowdfunding is going to be a really big part of that. And I believe that as audiences kind of become more community-based and as filmmaking is, or going to a film is kind of a community event, I think it makes total sense to have film production or film financing be a community thing too.
It's there's a lot of things that are going that way. Gaming very much is going that way as well. I mean, I just spent the weekend interviewing quite a lot of independent gamers an expo in Manchester in the UK, and an awful lot of them I've gone through either Greenlight on which is the system on Steam, or have gone through Kickstarter as ways of getting things funded, and they're all they're both you know, full-blown community, funding setup. So
yeah, Tom Schaefer about his Kickstarter was like such an inspiration because they blew through their goal in like a matter of hours, I think.
It's Tim Schaefer, so I'm not totally surprised. I mean, you know, when you've got the legend that's behind like Monkey Island and Full Throttle, which I adored as well, and Psychonauts. Psychonauts was such an underrated game. I'm not surprised that got picked up very quickly.
I'm actually interested. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how kind of gaming and or how crowdfunding works in movies as opposed to in gaming, because I think I'm curious about like what the budgets look like in those two things, but also how, like, I mean, gaming is such a, just the community that spreads when you have a really great game that brings in like all these players, and how that could be tied into financing a game. That's really interesting.
And I mean, there's a few people I know. There's who's the guy that I interviewed, Ron, I can't think of his last name, who's just funded a fantasy movie through Kickstarter. You know, so it's getting more and more popular as a way of getting certainly smaller and more, you know, little independent things funded, which is fantastic because you get so much more variety out of things rather than having to go through some massive studio system.
It's funny, I saw something, not to drag out the topic, but I did see this really cool article saying that apparently in the last few years there's been like $100 million invested in Kickstarter films, and there have been 8,000 movies made. And at first I was like, oh man, wow, that's not many movies. But then I like calculated it, and I'm like, holy crap, a lot of movies.
I mean, you know, and I think part of it is just the fact that the studio system got so big and so difficult to get into, and in the same way with games, you know, the publishers started to get so much control over gaming that people wanted another way out. And it's, I mean, with gaming in particular, it's kind of interesting because that's where gaming started, was kind of guys building little games in their bedrooms, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and you had to have a studio and you had to have this big development team, and then it's all kind of scaled back again now because so much people are, you know, so many people are mobile gaming, so you can produce much smaller things and still make a perfectly good living out of it, you know.
I think the only thing, the one thing that I've really learned from being in Kickstarter is I mean, this is maybe the only downside, that instead of pitching to the people who are expecting to hear a pitch from you, you're pitching to friends and family who are not used to you doing this. So then there's, you enter in all this like weird ethical gray area that I've been, you know, we've been trying to navigate this whole for like the last 30 days or so, you know, things like, do I want to promote this post on Facebook, you know? Do I want to pay for more people to see it? We didn't do that, by the way. We felt too weird about it. But then you think, am I a hypocrite? All these other things that we're doing, you know, promoting on social media is just weird.
yeah, particularly, I mean, I think if you're on Twitter and you've got followers, I think that's perfectly valid. And if you've got a Facebook page for a project, I think that's perfectly reasonable as well. It's just weird if you're doing it on your own Facebook account. I think it gets slightly more dubious.
Yeah, it definitely is weird. Yeah. So I'm excited to see how kind of the ethics of that and the etiquette of crowdfunding evolve as it becomes, you know, more of an established model of making money.
Yeah. Just a bit more about you. Is this the first kind of film you've made, or have you done other things in the past?
I've worked out in a peripheral sense on a couple other short movies that my friends were making, but this is definitely by far the biggest capacity I've had on a film. For Gisella as well, this is also her first full-length film, although she went to film school, so she has way more experience than I do. on the first day, this probably shouldn't tell you the story, but on the first day that we were filming, she said, here, unload this tripod, and I broke the tripod. And that's probably what she was looking for in a producer, so she kept, you know, but I can't even express how much I've learned and how interesting all of this is to me going forward. It's been quite a ride.
Yeah. In terms of the subject matter, what's the most convincing theory of time travel you've heard while she'd been doing the interviews?
Oh man. I feel like the Jeopardy theme song is going on in my head right now. I think maybe this is kind of a cop-out, but the idea that you can travel close to the speed of light and then come back to Earth, theoretically, and it would be far in the future, that's probably, that seems like the most doable is a weird word.
I believe that
could work, but there's a lot of other cool theories. We ended up talking to a lot of people about different mental ways of traveling through time. There was a really cool interview that we did with a yogi where he was talking about, in certain Vedic philosophies, you imagine that time doesn't really move forward naturally. It's matter that transforms time. So if you can control the way that you physically experience the world, then you can control the way that you perceive time. So I think that that's also, that just kind of makes sense in my brain. but who knows? I also think, while I have a second, I'll put in my word for the idea that I like the idea that you can create a time machine, but you can't go further back in time than the day that it was created, because that actually explains why we haven't seen time travelers yet, and it can put out those negative Nancys like Stephen Hawking. Just believe that it's possible. Yeah.
One of my favorite things was the Professor Brian Cox did. They did these things called the Faraday Lectures, which are done in London. They do a big sort of Christmas lecture, and he did a thing on how basically we're all traveling through time all the time, and he does a thing with lights and sort of moving lights at different speeds to show that, you know, if you set them off at sort of different ratios and different speeds, then one ends up going faster than the other. It was very kind of clever, but yeah, just to sort of prove the point that you know, time is entirely relative to where you are, you know.
Yeah, definitely. That's funny. I'm imagining him. You said it was a Christmas lecture. Is he standing up there and shooting these lights like Merry Christmas?
Yeah, they're all down at the place where Faraday made it most of his kind of discoveries. There's a lecture theatre underneath. I'm trying to think. It's one of the big institutes in London. One of the big science institutes in London. It's where and they still do these lectures every Christmas because they were sort of a big thing ever since Faraday's day. And they get guest people to come in. But yeah, no, it's that was very cool. They're, I don't know whether they're on YouTube actually, but they're worth looking up if you can find them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'll mention that to Gisella. That would be so cool to listen to or to watch.
But yeah, he, as I say, I think he'd be a great person to talk to because he's very into all this stuff. He is a professor of physics after all, so
definitely a certified badass.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, was in a 90s pop band, so you know,
he can soundtrack the film, and he'll be in.
So let's go with the obvious question: if you could go anywhere in time, where would you go?
I would probably go into the future. That's something that Giselle and I debate about a lot. Like, we want to go into the future, but how far? Because if you overshoot it, it could be really bad.
Yeah.
Or if you overshoot it, it could be really boring.
Yeah.
I'd say about 200 years, maybe. Because that seems like enough time that all the problems that we're facing today, I mean, climate change and related issues that are kind of facing our planet, we will have made some serious strides at those, and it'd be cool to see what we end up doing with that. But I also want to see, like, actually, you know what? No. Now I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking maybe 1,000 years is better, because apparently that's how long it's going to take to terraform Mars. And cool to see as well.
Yeah, that would be very cool to see.
How about you? Where would you go?
I don't know. I would quite like to see the future. That would be interesting. A couple of hundred years just to see kind of where we're at. Make sure the entire Earth isn't underwater, you know, that sort of thing. I think historical events would be quite interesting. Go back in time. Go and stand on the grassy knoll, see if there actually is somebody stood there with a shock. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was funny because we were talking to a cryonicist, so she's working with the idea of human preservation. And yeah. We asked her, do you think that cryogenic freezing is a form of time travel? And she said, oh, absolutely. Most people that I work with who are experts on this hope to be frozen precisely so that they can go forward in time and experience space travel in the future, which I thought was really interesting. So it's like you need to make the time leap before you can make the space leap.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, the whole space travel thing when it comes to time travel does start to warp your brain slightly, because until we can get to, you have got this issue of the fact that the further you travel away, the more, the faster you're going into time, so, you know,
yeah.
As you were saying, you know, so if you ever came back to Earth, it's going to be like way further into the future, so you'd have to find a way of traveling back in time to get back to where the same time you left, I guess.
just bank on there being a time machine when you get there in the future.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah. Shit, everyone I know is dead. Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be kind of interesting. It would be nice to kind of go into the future and certainly see whether we've actually done anything with the time travel or whether we're still kind of abandoning space like we are at the moment, which is kind of sad. But
oh, yeah, no, I know. I was watching something about that last night. That's really sad, actually. I have no idea what's going to happen to that, but I've always dreamed of growing up in space, so I hope it gets revived.
Yeah, no, it would be good. It would be, I mean, there was talk about kind of starting doing more things towards Mars, which would be nice. It'd be good to investigate that planet a bit more, I think.
One of the coolest other documentaries I've seen recently was about the people who are applying for that, the small colony that they're going to establish on Mars.
I'd heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, and they had open applications, which I thought was, like, beautiful and also insane. But somebody did a really short film about the people who apply to do this. I might steal that idea and do another one. It is such a cool idea for a full length, too.
Yeah, there was a great quote, and I can't remember who it was off, but I heard it this morning. It was like, somebody talking about going to Mars and saying, you know, I'd love to live on Mars, I'd love to die on Mars, but preferably not on impact.
That's awesome.
Rather light. I quite like that. So yeah, there's one last question which we always ask because we cover a lot of TV shows on the website. So basically ask, what is your favorite TV show or what TV show would you like to be involved with?
In a currently running TV show.
Yeah, go on. Currently running.
Okay. Can I get a minute to think about it?
Yep.
Because there's a couple. I have to dig back in my brain to before we were working on the film. Because ironically, I've gotten so like far out from pop culture while I've been working on this.
You wouldn't believe how many actors we talk to. You say, "What's your favorite TV show?" And they're actors on TV shows, and they're going, "I have no idea. I never get a chance to watch anything."
I have no idea what's on TV right now. That's awesome. My favorite TV show. And tell me if you're looking for something more more plot related. Because I was going to say Battlestar Galactica, but you know.
No, that's fine.
My favorite thing on TV right now is actually John Oliver's Last Week Tonight.
Yeah.
I'm a huge comedy fan, but I also like, I love the way that he's bringing long form journalism into comedic, kind of political commentary. So that's really off the wall answer, I know. I just go with Battlestar Galactica.
No, I'll take John Oliver's Last Week Tonight. We actually get that over here, thankfully. But that's a fantastic show. It's very funny. It runs on Sky Atlantic over here because they own all of HBO's stuff. So
that's funny. I can't imagine watching that show as a British person as opposed to watching it. Yeah, watching it as an American person always feels like getting schooled by a friend that you really look up to.
Yeah. No, he is brilliant. I used to love John Oliver on the Daily Show. We get the Daily Show as well, but I used to love him on the Daily Show, and I'm so glad they gave him his own show. And the nice thing about that is it's kind of like the Daily Show, but with a bit more time and thought managing to put into it because they have a week to do it. You know,
I think that's totally true. And it feels a little bit less like there's talking points being hashed out. I'm curious, what did George Takei say to that question?
I can't remember whether we asked him because it was the first podcast I ever did was with George Takei, and it was 2009 that was. I imagine he would have said Star Trek. I can't imagine he would have said anything else.
That's totally amazing. I can't imagine just like calling him and hearing like that voice go over the microphone.
No, he was. I will say as well, he was incredibly sweet. Because it was the first podcast I did, I was going through my kind of list of questions, obviously incredibly nervous because not only is the first time I'd done a podcast, it was the first, you know, he's like the most famous person I'd spoken to, you know, ever at the time.
Yeah.
So, but I got about three quarters of the way through my questions and completely lost my place and totally froze. And was like, I can't think of what to say. And he was really, really sweet and just sort of managed to talk me through it and started asking me things. And suddenly my head clicked back in and I started managing to get back into it. But he was absolutely adorable. He's one of the nicest guys, just very, very sweet, very, was just lovely. So yeah, if you ever get a chance to talk to him because he's just brilliant.
Oh, you know I will. You won't be able to avoid me. Well, that's great. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. This was really fun.
Yeah. No. Thanks for coming on. It's been really interesting.
Great.
And,
well.
Good luck. By the time this goes out, it will probably be Monday next week, so you will probably be, well, I would think you'll be fully funded by then. So.
Yeah, I think that we will be, but if anybody you know wants to support the film, we also have a page, I can send you the URL, it's on the New York Foundation for the Arts, where you can actually make a donation, and I'm not sure how that works in the UK, but in the US you can get it tax deducted. Okay. But there's a bunch of other ways that, you know, you can find us on Facebook. We have a website that's kind of in the making, becoming slowly cooler and cooler. But please tell people to check us out. I'd love to talk to more people about the film and about time travel, so anything we can get.
It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been great to talk to you too, Dave.
And I look forward to seeing it when it comes out.
All right. Peace out. I'll see you later.
All right. See ya. Bye.